nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and a very good evening to you listening to Nationwide. We are coming to you live from Juba. This Monday, 14th of December, 2020. Yes, today we shall be looking at a latest report that was launched here in Juba last week on the 8th of this month. And the report is entitled Land Reparation and Transitional Justice in South Sudan. The report follows a research conducted by the Institute for Security Studies in partnership with the Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance Organization between the months of July and September this year. We shall be talking more about it shortly, while you can join us and call also later on if you want to know more about it on 0912062950 or 0912062079. And joining me in the studio to talk more about this report is Jamie David Kolok, the Executive Director of Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance. Good evening and welcome to Nationwide program.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to be here.
Okay. First of all, tell us more about this report.
Yeah.
Why was it, why was the research carried out?
Yeah. Thank you very much. First of all, this report is a product of another report that we conducted about a year ago. And that report was entitled Citizen Perception on the Transitional Justice Processes in South Sudan. In other words, that report was trying to assess what citizens think about the various institutions or mechanisms presented in Chapter 5
of the agreement
of, the 2015 to 2018 as well. So in that report, a citizen said that one of the biggest predicaments in terms of human rights violation is actually a question of land.
In South Sudan?
In South Sudan. And they want to see land being incorporated as part of transitional justice, just like any of the human rights violations that are warranted within that chapter, and to benefit from number of issues, including compensation.
Does the land issue fall in the Chapter 5 in the agreement in transitional justice and reparation?
No, it doesn't. In the agreement, land is mentioned as a component of reform within Chapter 4.
Yeah.
But Chapter 4 is not quite explicit whether land is actually a human rights issue or it is a product of historical injustices.
Yeah.
And therefore, the people are thinking that if we confine land issues only as a reform factor, then the violations that have happened in relation to land will just be swept under the carpet. So they want to see that part of Chapter 5 of the agreement.
Was the research carried all over the country, or you selected some states?
The research was conducted in about five locations. Yei, in Juba here, in Yambio, Wau, and Magui. And the reason why we couldn't, obviously, it was not easy for us to comprehensively cover the whole country. But what I can assure you is that the feedback that we got from the respondent provide reasonable judgment to confirm that the issues of land in South Sudan is very serious.
Okay, now tell us your findings.
Yeah, well, first of all, something that has come out very clear is that violation related to land, in other words, land grabbing, increase with the proximity to conflict, which means that when you look at these specific periods in South Sudan, for example, the 2013 conflict and the 2016 conflict, or even conflicts that are related to the liberation struggle, demonstrated very clearly that within this particular period, cases of land grabbing or human rights violation related to land actually increase. That is one of the findings. And why did it increase? The respondent believed that the conflict resulted into displacement, which is reality. And therefore, people abandoned their homes, people abandoned their land, the land grabbers took advantage of the vacant land or vacant property, and that ended up claiming this land for themselves. That is one of the key findings. The other finding is that there seems to be massive confusion in terms of the legal framework that defines actually land. The issue is that, yes, it's the constitution, the local government act, and the Land Act of 2009. Unfortunately, these legal frameworks derive their power from the interim constitution of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, the provisions within this legal framework that governs land actually contradicts itself even with the transitional constitution that we have.
Yeah.
It's a big problem.
So, tell us more about the methodology you use for collecting this data.
Yeah, we use two methods. And I have to underscore that this research happened at the time of increased spiral of COVID-19. And therefore, a lot of focus was concentrated on online kind of study. That is basically with the key informants. But also we are able to conduct focus group discussions with ordinary people. Ordinary people in the sense of people who are victims of land grabbing. IDPs who have also lost their land because they were not around. We talked to lawyers, we talked to civil servants, we talked to members of parliament. And all in all, there is uniformity in the kind of finding that was actually part of the report.
Now, what are you going to do with your findings?
Well, this report is supposed to be for national consumption, and it is supposed to shape discussion around establishment of the transitional justice mechanism. Because the focus of the citizens is that, yes, Chapter 4 said land should be a reform factor, but the most important aspect is actually directed to the compensation and reparation. The agreement says that citizens who have lost property during the conflict will be compensated under the CRA if it is established. And therefore, the victims of land grabbing are arguing that if there is any compensation for land-related violations, for any other violations, then those who have lost land should equally be compensated.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are things that have happened within the proximity of conflict, and the perpetrators are similarly the same way with those other kind of violations that the agreement is saying should be compensated.
And as we speak right now, there are people living in the POCs or in the IDP camp whose land are still being occupied by some people. Though much has been tried to be done by the government to ensure that these people are evacuated or they vacate their plots or their houses, there are some people who are occupying these IDP houses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to what extent can this, your finding, help these people get their land back?
First of all, this report confirmed the fact that if we are really to confidently say IDPs should, for example, return to their communities, in which this has been the pronouncement even of the parties, if we are to confidently say refugees should voluntarily return,
mm-hmm.
then we must create an environment that builds confidence for them to return. And one of the environment is to ensure that those who occupy people's property unlawfully, including land, including houses, these guys must be removed. And in our recommendation, we did say, unfortunately, some of the individuals that were actually accused are senior military generals.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the report is recommending that as part of ending impunity, and I think the CDF some time back confirmed that he is going to fight impunity within the military. So if we are to fight impunity, then land-related conflicts should become part of the military justice,
mm-hmm.
so that we ensure that some of these generals that feel so powerful can be evicted within the circumstances of the military.
Okay. Now, let me take you back. I should have asked this in the beginning. What are your objectives? What was the objective of these findings?
Yeah, basically, the objective is to assert the reality that land is a critical aspect of either peace or instability.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality. Because the finding indicates that if, for example, land issues are not resolved, either whatever way, including Chapter 5, it will cause conflict within and between communities. And I think we have started seeing some of this aspect of the respondent judgment happening within South Sudan. And therefore, the ultimate objective is for the parties to understand that while we try to implement the agreement, there could be other hidden aspects of society that would, in one way or the other, escalate the violence.
Yeah.
And therefore, there is need to resolve these issues. And I think that is the purpose.
Yes, you have talked about one recommendation, but what are some of the recommendations which you think should be applied in order around this land issue to avoid further recurrence of conflict and also lead to stability of this country?
First of all, one of the key recommendations is that as we move towards establishing some of this transitional justice mechanism, there must be an inquiry on land matters.
By the
government. Mm-hmm. They need to do an inquiry to understand the extent to which land issues have actually galvanized the whole society. That inquiry should be able to help them shape discussion on how to resolve this land issue. The other recommendation is that land need to be governed by consistent laws, and these laws should have to conform with the transitional constitution of the Republic of South Sudan 2011 as amended, and therefore most of these legal frameworks must be reformed as quickly as possible. The other one is that up to now, South Sudan do not have the land policy. The discussion around land policy started since 2006. Up to today, the land policy cannot be officially adopted. And yet the agreement is saying, as soon as the government is formed, there must be need to reform the land policy in a manner that depicts understanding of the people of what exactly land should be managed like in South Sudan. So these are some of the key recommendations. However, there are also some recommendations that are directed, for example, to the international community and the African Union. Some time back, we had a discussion with the African Commission for Human and People Rights, and with a representative of the government did request that the African Commission need to help the government in establishing the compensation and reparation, because after all, they don't have idea what it is.
Yeah.
So we are saying that, yes, this is a very good recommendation, and therefore the African Union, with its sister entity called the African Commission on Human and People Rights, should help the government to try to establish some of this mechanism. Not that they cut and paste this mechanism from somewhere, but they need to understand the context of South Sudan and help South Sudanese define what is it exactly that they call transitional justice.
Yes, and as you were talking to some of these respondents, what are their major concerns?
The first of all, the major concern is that regardless of the fact that the judiciary, for example, is trying to help address some of these issues, there are very crystal clear indication to suggest that even if a judgment is passed in the interest of somebody that has lost land, mm-hmm. this person will never get the land.
Why?
Intimidation. Mm-hmm. There has been considerable intimidation. And most of the victims are ordinary citizens who are intimidated by somebody who has a gun. And I think that finding correlate with the recent, for example, intimidation of judges at the judiciary here because of land issues.
Yeah.
And it correlate with some of the recent incidences where people resulted into serious confrontation and loss of life.
Mm-hmm.
I think these are things that keep coming. The other one is that people or land grabbers should desist from thinking that land-related issues should be considered as dividend of the liberation struggle or dividend of any of these struggles. Because somebody feels, for example, in Ye, the concern of the citizen is that some of the land was grabbed at the time when Ye was captured. And therefore, the argument was that we fought for it. So this must stop. This is the argument of the respondent.
Yes. First of all, which particular institution within the government are you going to hand over your recommendations and your findings?
Yeah, first of all, we have to acknowledge that the agreement is quite clear in terms of the entities that are relevant towards transitional justice. Remember, this is land and transitional justice. And in the agreement, you'll notice that the primary entity within the transitional government that is entrusted with this process is the Ministry of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they're going to be the primary target of this report. Number two, it is also very clear that the parliament, which actually does not exist now in terms of its reconstitution, is going to play a critical role, especially when it comes to passage of the legislation. So they are also another entity that, if it is reconstituted, will be focusing on ensuring that they understand this report. Lastly, of course, obviously, the grantors to the peace agreement are very important that they look into this report, considering that the agreement actually provides, for example, the UN Security Council to be part of these processes, the African Union, the African Commission. All these entities must look into that report so that they help the transitional government build very concrete institutions that are able to address some of these issues that we may be seeing issues that are easy, but to some extent they can be problematic.
Okay. Yes, if you have just joined us right now, you are listening to Nationwide with me, Sunny Martin, and my guest is Jamai David Kolok, Executive Director of Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance. And we are discussing more about their just released report just 1 week ago entitled Land Reparation and Transitional Justice in South Sudan. And the report was launched here in Juba after their research in 5 places in the country. You can call us shortly on 0912062079 or 0912062950. So you can also send us a short SMS on our SMS number 0929693205. Those are all the numbers you can use to reach us right here in our studio. Yes, Jamai, before our lines are open, this report is just coming 1 week to the 7th anniversary of the Juba crisis, December 15, 2013, that resulted into what you are doing right now, the agreement of 2015, the agreement of 2018, which is now being implemented very slowly. Tomorrow is actually the 7th anniversary of this crisis that erupted, the war that erupted in Juba on a Sunday. That was on a Sunday, 15th December 2013. And now in the agreement, you are talking about the issue of transitional justice. What impact, really, I ask again, what impact can this kind of report have on people who are looking forward for justice?
We just have to acknowledge that what happened on the 15th of December was a dark chapter in the history of South Sudan. And unfortunately, 7 years later, South Sudanese are still longing for genuine stability. And therefore, even within these 7 years, whether it is within the context of the 2015 peace agreement, or right now under the revitalized peace agreement, issues of human rights related violations that are enshrined in Chapter 5 have not yet been realized. Up to now, South Sudanese are longing to have a platform that they can use to enhance reconciliation, for example. The Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing has not been established. There are South Sudanese out there who are longing to ask questions of why certain things have happened to them, and also who are expecting that, for example, there should be compensation. This is not happening. There are also South Sudanese out there who are hoping that as part of ending its impunity and creating stability for this country, there could be accountability mechanisms set in place, including, for example, the hybrid court. These things are not actually happening. So unfortunately, as we continue to talk, a lot of these provisions have not been implemented. However, this report is just part of the hope that the South Sudanese people have, that in one way or the other, while there are certain individuals that would want not to implement some of this provision, there could be some leadership that will borrow some of this recommendation to shape discussion around addressing the concern of the citizen. After all, if we really will talk about genuine stability in South Sudan, it is important that some of these calamities that have happened to people are actually addressed, and addressed well within the context of the peace agreement. So really, I don't have any positive memory of what happened in the last 7 years, but we continue to hope that the peace that they sign will be implemented more than the signatures that they put in that paper.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people will be thinking that many reports or research has been carried out in South Sudan or conducted, and you come, you present it to the people, but it has no impact. They don't take it serious, the concerned body. So why do you think this time around maybe the concerned body, like you mentioned, the yet-to-be reconstituted parliament, the Minister of Justice, will take your report serious and implement some of your recommendations, though not all?
Well, the uniqueness about this report is that it is not only to the consumption of the parties or a consumption of the government. It is also to the consumption of the subnational entities, including chiefs, religious institutions, and the citizens. One thing which is clear about transitional justice is that whether the government commits itself to towards implementing Chapter 5 or not, transitional justice processes will still have to continue. And as we talked, actually there are already initiatives that are going on, local initiative that are either enhanced by religious institution or the chiefs. So this report will continue to empower some of these individuals who are already focusing on uniting their people, who are focusing on enhancing reconciliation, who are focusing on even administering certain reconciliations aspect that are related to compensation. So this report will be consumed beyond the same individuals that have failed to implement some of these many reports that have happened. So that is the uniqueness about this report. We draw some pride in it, in the sense that it is going to be useful even beyond Juba.
Okay, now we have questions coming in via our SMS number. When Dow Dwot from Bor Town is asking, from your findings through your research, is land dispute confined only to Equatoria, or it's another issue all over the country?
Well, thank you very much for that question. I think land issues have never been confined to particular regions. Mm. I think the findings seems to suggest that the same predicament of land-related issues that are happening here are also happening across the country. And that is why this research will open opportunity even for further interrogation, especially on certain aspect of land-related conflict. One thing which this research do not cover is, for example, looking at conflict that are attributed, for example, to issues of boundary. That has not been part of this report. And therefore, this is an area where any of these institutions should actually be focusing on. And therefore, when you even look at the outcome of the national dialogue, you would notice that the representation in the national dialogue was a national representation. And they exactly came out with the resolution that touched on the aspect of resolving land-related conflict. And therefore, I'm certain to say that this report is supposed to be a national report, not a regional report.
Yes, Mading Malual Along from Malakal Town, Upper Nile State, he says, as you are conducting this research to know more about the issue of land in the country, we have our border. Our land towards the border with the neighboring countries are being grabbed, and the government is quiet about it. And we have seen some areas in Eastern Equatoria and Eastern Equatoria being taken by our neighboring countries, and nothing is being done about it. So he says, in your findings, did you include that? And what do you think can be done by the government to claim back the land being taken by our neighboring countries?
Yeah, first of all, like I've said, the scope of this study do not include international border issues.
Yeah.
And therefore, we do not focus much in terms of land-related conflict, for example, between us and Uganda, or us and Kenya, and so on, or us and Sudan. We didn't focus on that. But I'm aware that in the past, I think there have been some considerable initiative done by the government, for example, to have conversation around land-related issues between South Sudan and Uganda. And I think what should be done is that, yes, we need to understand clearly that these are also very serious issues that can cause conflict. And I believe that the government broadly, and a number of entities that are required to be able to address these issues, should be able to take some steps. This research, this time, do not focus on that area.
Makwe Wegdit from Warab State, Kwajok, is asking, what is the biggest issue with the land in South Sudan, and what can be done by all the concerned body to address the issue of land-related conflict? Like you mentioned that earlier, if you manage the issue of land, you can have stability, but if you don't manage it well, you can have conflict.
Yes. I think we have to understand that land, especially in the urban areas, is becoming very, very lucrative. And even you would agree with me that even within the context of the conflict, the buying and selling of land did not stop.
Yeah.
So it means there is a value attached to that. In any case, some businesses were affected by the conflict, but not land-related businesses. A lot of people were able to use this opportunity to try to buy and sell land. So there is high value attached to accessibility to land. And that is why land has become extremely very, very competitive. And therefore, we are saying that while we acknowledge that these issues have been happening, some of them are actually product of legal frameworks that are not respected. For example, today you find that one person will sell his land, and the other one will sell that land to more than 2-3 people. One piece of land will have like 2-3 land titles. These are things that are happening. And by the way, the report also found that the chiefs, unfortunately, are actually culprits.
Mm-hmm.
The chiefs are actually culprits.
In what way?
They are actually the one sometimes escalating some of these multiple sale of land.
Mm-hmm.
And the finding seems to indicate that, because in South Sudan we have different categories of chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
There are chiefs that have acquired their power through a hereditary process.
Yeah.
Where the grandfather was a chief, and yeah, therefore they continued and they become chiefs.
Yeah.
But during the recent past, chiefs have also been appointed.
Yeah.
So this finding seems to suggest that those who are appointed are actually more culpable than those who inherit, simply because they have nobody to report to other than to the authority that have appointed them.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore some of them have been involved in, for example, not justifying that this land, for example, belonged to this person, despite the fact that they clearly understand that this land belongs to somebody. So this is not only about people in the military. This is not about senior government officials. It is also about chiefs. It's also about the ordinary people. So these are very serious findings. Now, which requires that the system of our legislation should be able to be developed in a manner that actually desists or carve these guys out of this kind of engagement. This
yes,
is very, very important.
Ngor Kur Akwe from Awil East Payam, Yamyam Payam is asking, you mentioned earlier, most of the culprits who are involved in this land grabbing are men in uniform who have guns. And this land is taken from civilians by force, and when you talk, sometimes it can lead to death. What can be done to eradicate this?
Yes, I think we gave the recommendation that the only person or only entity that can confront that person with a gun is the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the Ministry of Justice, Ministry of Defense. So we are saying that if these individuals, for example, are guys that are affiliated to the National Army, for example, I know that there are a lot of focus to ensure that some of these wrong elements that spoil the name of the National Army are actually gotten rid of. And therefore, we are suggesting that the military has got a justice system that can be able to confront you regardless of your ranks. And that is why we are recommending that, I think, even the Ministry of Defense, for example, and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces should also take this report seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they will be able to establish mechanism through which they can apprehend these individuals that go around to intimidate people. I think it was clear recently that the effort, for example, that was done by the CDF in terms of establishing the court, mm-hmm, in Ye was useful in terms of confronting military civilian related crimes. And therefore, the same can be done as far as land issues are concerned.
Yes, Bonathiek Akotulwal from Kwajok says the issue of land has become one of the major concern or source of conflict in the country that involves the issue of farmers and cattle herders. And now we want to hear from you. Do you think land-related cases will ever end in this country, given our weak justice system?
There is nothing that will never end. I think at some point this will end. And of course we know that even within the context of the national dialogue, there is the issue of conflict that are between cattle keepers or pastoralists and the farmers. And I think the argument, for example, has been that some of these individuals are displaced because of natural hazard, in which their area is flooded, and therefore it is sometimes reasonable to argue that you cannot keep your animals in a flooded area.
Yeah.
And therefore there is a reason for you to move to an area that can be able to sustain your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we really need to understand as South Sudanese is that, yes, I know it is a bad idea for somebody, for example, to bring his cattle to eat somebody's crops and whatever. But then we need to acknowledge that we must put in place a system that while farmers want to protect their livelihood, they should also recognize the livelihood of the pastoralist. And therefore, there is need, for example, to have conversation. One of the problems that we do not have is conversation and consultation. with communities, because the law is also very clear. The law is saying that any particular community need to gazette a specific area for this kind of activities. Now, if this is not gazetted, then obviously you expect people to just go anyhow.
Yeah.
So we need to ensure that there is a balance between the two. And our report is saying that, yes, these are concerns, but as we solve this concern, there should be a win-win situation. One of the things which is not ideally good is if somebody continues to stay beyond the predicament that has brought him out.
Yeah.
And that is to say, for example, insecurity has calmed down and the water does, is no longer there. You have your grass. So if the reason for coming was the flooding and the flooding is no longer there, then why don't you go back? Mm-hmm. I think these are some of the things that need to be discussed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, you are listening to Nationwide. My name is Annie Martin and my guest is Jame David Kolok, Executive Director of Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance. And we are discussing about their latest report that was launched last week, entitled Land Reparation and Transitional Justice in South Sudan. And if you have got any question, call us right now on 091206-2079 or 091206-2950. Hello, Redmira. Hello.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening to your name and where are you calling from?
I'm John from Rumbek.
Okay, John, go ahead, please.
Okay, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to part 12 of Transitional Constitution of 2005, chapter 2, about the land tenure,
mm-hmm.
you will find that, you know, the land tenure system in South Sudan consists of the three.
Yeah.
One is the public land, two, the community land, and three, the private land. So I want to ask, which of the three did our guest, you know, focused on to conduct that particular study?
Okay.
Is it the public land? Is it the community land? Or is it the private land?
Okay. Thank you so much, John from Rumbek. You can also do the same on 091206-2079 or 091206-2950. Yes, Jame, this question for
yes, Rumbek. Yes, absolutely. John is correct. And it is not only even in the interim constitution. Article 170 of our current transitional constitution defines land in the similar manner, mm-hmm. the way it was defined before. And this research did not necessarily focus on one aspect of this. It mm-hmm. actually focused on all conflict related to either private land ownership, communal land ownership, or public land ownership. But what we have seen is that in terms of, if you are to ask me, for example, which of the three
mm-hmm.
is rather more problematic in terms of land grabbing,
mm-hmm.
actually a lot of private land has been grabbed and followed by communal land. Now, when it comes to public land, one thing that we have noticed is that, especially at the communal level, the land is sometimes taken in the name of public utility, like to build government or public related services. But then this land is gradually also turned to become private land.
Mm-hmm.
But the process of acquiring that land is in the name of community, give us this land for public use. These are things that also have happened. But all in all, a lot of this land, especially in urban setting, and the private land has really gotten the real bit of the problem related to land grabbing.
Yes. You can also call us right away on the same number, 091206-2079, or you can send us a short SMS on 092-9693-205. Hello, Redmira. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, your name?
I'm Bartu in Juba.
Okay, Bartu from Juba. Go ahead.
Thank you and the guests in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I have just some few questions here.
Okay.
The guest in the studio actually did his research and I made that report. I need to know from him, did he do a research from these people who are actually moving with their cattle and invading different areas. What makes them to do that? Then secondly, can they find out, or have they tried to find out, among all these cattle keeping community in South Sudan? I think when you look at a critical angle, you will realize that we have two big cattle keeping community that doesn't actually have interest in interfering with the other people's land. That is the Kaposa and the Murule. But we have one major community that is disturbing the whole of this region, even up to Upper Nile, Bahr Ghazal, and Equatoria. Mm. The same community are the one disturbing. What is their major problem?
Okay.
Do they want to invade the whole country?
All right.
So have they tried to find out exactly why other communities who are keeping cattle are not actually doing the same behavior, and yet one community is doing it?
All right. Thank you so much, Bartu, from Juba here. Yes, sir.
Yes. Jamie. Yeah, well, I think I said that from the beginning, that there are always reasons that are advanced.
Yeah, like, and you gave the flooding.
Yeah, the flooding. And obviously, even when we used to be in primary school, and they say mention causes of pastoralist migration, for example, you would notice that they are moving in search of pasture, and always if their area where they originate or they stay does not have the necessary pasture to be able to feed their animals, they will always have opportunity to migrate. And I think these are things that may not necessarily end simply because somebody want to be seen as somebody coming from another place.
Yeah.
I think that is not the purpose of our study. Our study only is trying to recommend for establishment of the systems, because we know that cattle migration will never end in South Sudan. That is the truth. It will have to continue, but then if we have system established that is able to respect, for example, the community where you are going, and be able to define clearly what period, for example, do you want to stay in that particular community, that is what is called peaceful coexistence. And I think that is what is lacking. And the report is saying that for us to be able to move forward, those things need to be put in place. As simple as that.
Okay. Job Kwol Nyomdid from Kwajok is saying that what do you think the Ministry of Defense and can actually follow your recommendations to ensure that these perpetrators who feels like they are above the law and serving in the army should be brought to book?
Yeah, one thing which is clear is that by the way, some of these land grabbers are known. They are very clearly known.
They know them.
They know them. They know them. And that is why when we even ask them, okay, if your land has been taken, would you be happy if you are compensated with, for example, another land?
Somewhere.
They are saying no. Why should I be compensated for a land that I see is mine and I know the perpetrator?
Mm-hmm.
In any case, it is the land grabber that must move from my land. So these are very, very clear issues that can easily be confronted. Now, in terms of what the Ministry of Defense can do, of course, they work together with the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. They just need to ensure that they have records of some of these land grabbers. These records, by the way, already exist. Even in the judiciary, this record exists. We are aware of cases where rulings are made, but still this individual continue
to occupy the land.
So this is not like you want to go and study and say who has taken this land. These guys are there, is known, and if there is a will to remove them, they will be removed. And I think in the past we have seen graders pushing houses even here in Juba.
Yeah.
And I think those are the things that need to be done, mm-hmm, for those who have taken people land illegally.
Now, from research on this land issue, do the people believe in the justice system? Do people say, okay, if my land is taken, I can go to court and get my land back?
Unfortunately, people believe that the justice system is overshadowed by threats. And therefore, even if they are able to seek for justice, there will be no immediate positive outcome. Actually, some of the people that we ask, what do you now do if your land is grabbed? They say they will be waiting. they will be waiting, hoping that time will come where the judiciary will have full authority to evict this kind of individuals. So there is there is a question of mistrust in these systems. So in other words, they are saying that the judiciary need to be reformed and be empowered to be able to work collaboratively with the law enforcing institution to execute orders that come out of the judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, we are coming to the end of our discussion this evening. First of all, I would like you to give us your general overview of the whole research.
Yes. The research actually, like we correctly put in the title, it in other words brings LAN closer to the transitional justice chapter, which is chapter 5 from chapter 4.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, we are saying that while the reform aspect is very important, which is the reforms of the laws, the aspect of the violation, which is a human right violation related to LAN, should be incorporated within, for example, the compensation and reparation. So if the agreement, for example, says that the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing should receive application of people who would want to be compensated for their losses, then they should also accept to receive application from somebody who says my land has been taken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is really the basis of that research. And this is not from us.
From the people. Are you not trying to amend the agreement again?
We are not necessarily amending the agreement, because we are not saying we need to entirely move the aspect of land in chapter 4 to chapter 5.
Mm-hmm.
But we are saying that chapter 5 provides for establishment of legislation.
Yeah.
And that this legislation must be established through consulting the people.
Mm-hmm.
So this study, in one way or the other, has informed part of that consultation, where the citizens are saying, yes, as we develop this legislation, incorporate LAN into the aspect of transitional justice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we are talking about.
Okay. Now, and finally, because our time is over, Jame, David, with this report, do you think if it is taken seriously, the issue of land conflict over land, and sometimes that leads to a loss of life, can be somehow minimized in the country and people live in peace?
If it is taken seriously, and of course I really recommend that it's taken seriously, that the argument of the respondents that, for example, if it is not resolved, it will escalate the conflict, should be taken very, very seriously. And I think if these systems are put in place, and some of the recommendations that we have made in terms of how to confront some of these guys with guns, how to try to ensure that we respect communal authority in terms of appointing chiefs other than really appointed by politicians or any other general, these issues would be resolved. So therefore, it is just a matter of ensuring that we reform our legislation, we reform the land framework, and we execute any outcome that comes either from the judiciary or from anybody that has the authority to get somebody access his land.
Thank you so much, Jame David Kolok, Executive Director of Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, for coming to our studio to tell us more about your findings on your latest report entitled Land Reparation and Transitional Justice in South Sudan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And we have come to the end of first hour of Nationwide. Stay tuned, as the news will be coming next at 6 p.m. in English. Join me for the second hour, where I will be giving you more news from within and around the country. Stay tuned.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.